Welcome to Thinking Reimagined.
Thinking Reimagined is a unique platform for thoughts-provoking intergenerational dialogue
in a diverse and inclusive setting with a focus on impactful change
in the global workplace and community.
Our stakeholders' conversations aim to spark thought,
leadership,
curiosity,
engagement,
collaboration, and learning
amongst individuals, teams, and beyond.
Enjoy this episode. And subscribe to Thinking Reimagined on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and other outlets. Today's conversation, innovation and society. There has been much in the news lately about gender parity and the SDGs, but I do wish to share some data with you today before we start this conversation. The latest Global Gender Index indicates that it would take 131 years for us to achieve gender parity. That's in the 146 countries surveyed. In Africa, it is still estimated 130 years, and in some areas, 237 years. I don't think any of us will be around till then to see this be achieved, but hopefully future generations will. According to data, the business generation of women entrepreneurs in the UK is £1.6 trillion. And in the US, it is $3 trillion. It's astronomical, but we cannot say the same for Africa. Although it is estimated that if we can reach gender parity, we can increase the economic participation of women and the value in the economy to about 250 million. By 2025. Interesting data that I picked up the other day whilst I was researching this topic in terms of countries with the highest percentage of women entrepreneurs was very shocking. And yet I'm not surprised if you know the history of the continent. Botswana, 38.5%. Uganda, 38.4%. And Ghana, 37.2%. We're joined by a dynamic team of panelists today. And of course, my co-host, Nifemi. How are you, Nifemi?
Well, I'm doing very well, Dr. Emma. It's raining here in Lagos. Good morning, everyone. And thank you for starting with that very eye-opening statistics to help us understand and put this conversation in the right perspectives. Our conversation on this episode, everyone, is spot on as we continue to advocate for gender equality. I understand, Dr. Emma, that though women constitute about 50% of the global working age population, a report says that they generated only 37% of global GDP in 2020. So if we get more women involved, and I mean more productively involved, we're looking at adding as much as $12 trillion annually to the global GDP by 2025. So the conversation is around investing in women-led businesses. And I'm quite excited about the team that we'll be speaking with on this particular one, you know, as we continue to drive conversations in the area of economic growth that would not only, you know, unleash the potential of our women, but also impact positively on the development of our societies. We're joined by Helen Martin G. She's founder and president Savitas in the United Kingdom. She's an award-winning serial entrepreneur and founder of Savitas, the global thought leadership hub for women business leaders, with patrons the Right Honorable Theresa May and Tessa Sanderson. The founding patron was the late Banisa Bhutto. A long-standing parliamentary advisor and House of Lords Chief of Staff, Helen is a UK delegate to the UN and on strategic working groups for G7, G20 and others. She established the United Kingdom's All-Party Parliamentary Group for Entrepreneurship, and she's a board member of the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Women and Enterprise and the Inclusive Entrepreneurship, APPG. So I can go on and on to read her profile, but we have limited time on this side of the world. I want to say, I would just like to add that after an initial career in banking, Helen was founder and early stage investor in several technology companies. She developed a property portfolio and founded two award-winning sustainable food businesses. I wish we had the DJ here who can generate the claps. But welcome, Helen Mattingly. Thank you for joining us on this episode.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Ngozi Uyuwole is president, Commonwealth Businesswoman Africa, an accomplished entrepreneur, founded Noxy Limited some 20 years ago with specialization into furniture production and personal protective equipment. She's a result-driven, resilient, and ace woman, a womanpreneur with extensive experience in leadership, business management, strategic planning, and mentoring. She's currently undergoing a fellowship program at Vita Voices Global Partnership in the US. And she has to accredit several national and global recognitions that would not have enough time to tell you about. But she's got awards and achievements in areas of thought leadership, public speaking, mentorship, advocacy, and the list is long. Ngozi Uyuwole, thank you so much for joining us on this conversation.
Many thanks, Nifebi. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Peter Ahmed Boyo is co-producer, is actor, filmmaker, art director, and co-producer of the Thinking Reimagined podcast. And Dr. Ama, entrepreneur, educationist, behavioral consultant, and resilience coach. She's the media past chairperson of the British Business Group Nigeria and currently chairs Africa Sustainable Trade, which she co-founds. I'm curious to find out how Helen, you know, has been able to come this far. I'm considering it's a good place to start, but Dr. Ama, perhaps you have a better idea of how you want to drive this conversation.
Well, I would like to first start by correcting myself because I just got a message that said it's not 250 million that's expected to grow the GDP in Africa with more gender parity, but it's actually 316 is the estimate, that the $316 billion increase in GDP is possible if we can achieve gender parity by 2025, which we know is not going to happen. I mean, let's get realistic right here. Yes, that is a very good question to start, because one of the big challenges that women face is how to sustain their businesses and to grow and scale their businesses. And perhaps this is a good place for us to start that dialogue. So Helene, since Nifemi had called on you, may you do us the honors and getting the conversation started. Thank you.
Thank you very much to both of you. And those statistics are really impressive, aren't they? From a government review led by Dame Alison Rose here in the UK, we've discovered that 250 billion could be unlocked if there was gender parity for between female entrepreneurship and male entrepreneurship. And that figure is quoted many times, but that's a really exciting opportunity from the UK alone. So if you extrapolate that and take it globally, then we're talking many multi-trillions, and some of the figures that you've quoted, I think, could even be exceeded. But we have to do the groundwork first. We have to make it happen. And of course, it's not going to happen naturally unless we've all got those 200 years that Dr. Rama referred to at the beginning of the podcast. So, you know, one of the things that we're really keen on at Savitas, as a serial entrepreneur myself, I know that scaling a business is sometimes the harder part. You know, having a great idea and coming up with it and starting a business, it's tough, but actually starting it and then keeping it going is the more difficult part of that. And what I think is really important as an entrepreneur, and particularly a female entrepreneur, is to have a great peer group around you that you can learn from. You know, the very wise amongst us learn from other people's mistakes, don't have to make their own. That's not to say that we shouldn't be afraid of failure and then to bounce back up and get on again. But I think having other people, having a peer group around us that we can learn from and see how they've grown their businesses is really a key to success in entrepreneurship, and particularly for women, because we have fewer role models out there.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, that's very good. And, you know, I'm so glad you said that, because we know that mentorship and sponsorship is very critical, but coaching is, business coaching particularly, is very critical in the workspace. And when you don't have very many role models that you can go to, it becomes very critical. And studies have shown that women who are mentored by men, it's a very disturbing one, women who are mentored by men, rise faster than women who are mentored by other women. There's a US study that was done, I think a year and a half ago. So it is compelling that women begin to mentor, coach, and sponsor, because it's one thing to mentor, but you also have to sponsor the person so that they can make that elevation within the workspace. But I also think that it's important for us to encourage failure in business. You know, we tend to shy away from failure, but if you don't fail, then how do you grow? How do you learn? It's one thing to learn from another's mistake, but you have to put yourself out there. But in a world that criticizes failure, it is very difficult to fail, particularly when you are a woman. So I do agree with you to have that backbone that supports you, but also to have your own, what I call, set of board of directors who are there to build that nexus to help you stay stable and to have the vision that's necessary for growth and scaling. And let's not forget the biggest one for us women, funding. Access to funding is so critical. Ngozi, what are your thoughts on this? Because I know you have a large network of women on the African continent.
Yes. Thank you very much. And it's nice to be here and to share a lot and learn also. But everything that's said here is actually the truth. It's very disturbing. The gender parity is so wide, but with the organizations like us and Savitas and yours and every other ones, and the energy we're all putting in to close that gender gap, I mean, it may look like a tall order, like I always use the word, it always looks like you're swimming against the tide. But is it doable? It's doable. Someday that gap will be closed. And then you just talked about mentoring, role models. Indeed, there are very few role models. But, you know, the truth is we have to think of those entrepreneurs who haven't got opportunity to education, information, which are the problems that a lot of them are facing. For instance, in Nigeria here, you have the SMEs who make up the majority of businesses in Nigeria, or we call them the economy builders. A lot of them are not very educated, but they're actually adding a lot to the economy and to the GDP of the country. Yes, mentoring them is very important, but a lot of them are there pounding the streets and running their businesses without much support. And that's where you talked about funding. Funding, when you talk about funding in Nigeria, that also brings the challenges that these women face, the stereotype bias. Where do they believe in what they're doing? And because you're a woman, is somebody willing to listen to you as a woman? Are they taking you seriously? Those are the challenges these women face. It's very disturbing. I mean, on a personal story, I remember when I was just starting early in my business and I went to one of the banks to ask for money. Some little bigger sum. You know what the man at the bank, first he came in and looked at me and thought, oh, he said, I thought you were a man. I said, unfortunately, I'm a woman. Then he said, did you come with your husband? Those are the kind of things you hear and you see. And you ask, are you encouraged to continue? And then the bureaucracy involved in asking a little a young woman, trying to start a business. Documentation, bring that, bring this. Obviously, those are the challenges. It's huge. I'm saying it because, you know, it's a little, the conversation I wish we have a whole day to talk about it, but it is very discouraging. Are you still talking about that? You look at the taxes, the multi-taxation of businesses. So I'm talking from my region, you know, and I'm using Nigeria as a region to talk about. But it cuts across Africa. When I speak to other women in Kenya, in Lesotho, and maybe in Zimbabwe, even in South Africa, the story is the same. Women suffer from all the bureaucracies that banks or financial institutions put in place. The role models may be few, but then we, you and I, are the role models. And we have to actually keep, what you're doing, Amma, is beautiful, because this is also a way to mentor women. I really hope and wish that this, what you're doing, would go out more for women to see or come into spaces like this and listen to what we're talking about. It will give them comfort and confidence, which is a major challenge of women not being able to use their voice, not being able to speak. They lack that confidence, and somebody being able to say your problem. So the disparity, you know, is a lot. But we, by actively participating in a lot of conferences or spaces or speaking up, you know, will improve or the presence of teaching them the use of technology, related gadgets, and so on, would help and is helping. Maybe I'm trying to drive forward, but I really want to say I may be taking you to the next conversation, which I don't know if I'm predicting, and that is the innovation or innovative skills that these women have. Thank God for social media. Thank God for smartphones. That is also very helpful in the way they've been able to prove and show their skills.
Absolutely.
You know, Ngozi, you brought up some really interesting points, because very often you have to look at the social and cultural background in which women are trying to establish their businesses, because they're not always conducive for women businesses. And getting past that is the first hurdle. At the end of the day, many of these women will eventually have families. And in many cultures, it's expected that they're going to give up their jobs to take care of their families. And of course, when they re-enter the economic system, the business system again, they find that they have lost some ground. I was speaking to somebody the other day, an engineer, who indicated that the rate of attrition of women in engineering, once they reach that 35, 30, you know, between 35 and 40, is astronomical. Mm-hmm. But also the challenges of continuing to be innovative in the field lends itself to these questions that we continue to ask. So I'm curious to find out, you know, from the UK to Nigeria and wherever else we are, what is it that we can do as women to facilitate this innovation? Because, you know, as entrepreneurs, we're looking for solutions. We're identifying where problems are and finding solutions, and of course, contributing to the economy. Helene, what would you like to say about that?
Well, I think that some of the issues that have just been outlined do happen all around the world, and not just for women, actually, but for entrepreneurs as a whole. You know, getting funding is a key issue, you know, having to go through the red tape and the processes that are involved. But from a women's perspective, there is obviously a bigger issue. What I think we as women can do, those that are so lucky enough to have been successful in our businesses, is to make sure that we back other women-led businesses. It's really, really important that we put our money where our mouth is and start to support entrepreneurs coming through. You know, in Sabotas, one of the things that we're doing is creating spaces that women entrepreneurs can come together and learn from each other. And part of that will be, how do you pitch for funding? We did a roundtable recently, and one of the very successful entrepreneurs, who's now on her second business, having done a really good and big buyout, said you have to put yourself in the position of the person who's lending you the money or who's investing that funding. You have to think from their perspective, not from your own. And I think that's a really good lesson for all of us. In the UK, we do have the Invest in Women code, which I think about 200 financial institutions have signed up for. And it would be great to see that going globally so that organisations, the big banks and the big financial institutions can actually show and flag up to say, yes, we will invest in women-led businesses, because I think that's really important. But if you don't have your business plan right, if you don't get your pitch right, you're not going to get that funding. So you have to do your prep first as a female entrepreneur, as any entrepreneur. You have to know what you're asking for, be very clear about it. And I know there are still statistics. I think something like 2% of VC funds worldwide go to women-led businesses. Well, that is appalling. And I really hope that if more of us get together and change that, first of all, by understanding what the person on the other side of the desk wants, by getting more women involved in the investment community, and by getting our beans in the road before we go to ask for that funding, then I think we can change that.
I was thinking that you could
thank
also...
Thank you. I would like to add...
I was thinking that you could also share with us how you've been able to stay updated with industry trends and, you know, business strategies and technological advancements. You have a stint with tech companies yourself. How do women entrepreneurs, you know, strategically invest in continuous learning to be able to get the best of what they're doing?
Well, from my perspective, it's curiosity. You know, I got involved in technology many, many years ago when tech companies were still being run in people's bedrooms. I say people's, actually. It was usually teenage boys. And a colleague of mine and I went around to talk to different tech entrepreneurs, and they literally were quite often in dark basements and things like that. So I've kept that curiosity going. But you're absolutely right about technology. My involvement, I'm not a technology person, but I understand the benefits of technology and I'm excited by them. And that's what's kept my interest going. But interestingly, there are far too few women involved in tech businesses in STEM as a whole. Actually, I've seen a gap in the market. I've actually just set up a company called Ava, which is a technology business that will be training more women, obviously around AI and machine learning, but the whole digital spectrum, so that we can get more women. Because technology isn't just about running a tech business. It's in every single business. It's in every aspect of our lives, as we know. And part of what we will do with Ava when we launch it later this year is we will train some of the 8 million economically inactive people in the UK and get them really working to understand technology, to embrace technology and to have fun with it. So that's one of the things that we're doing, I'm doing personally, to really make sure that that happens. And then as we develop the business, we'll also set up an incubator so that we can bring in technology and women-led businesses and actually fund them. Because I think it's important, as I said before, for us to walk our talk. I hope that answers your question.
It does.
And I'm so glad that you mentioned STEM, because that is, it's not just a topic, it's actually a necessity. It's essential that we get more women into that field. Live Abundantly, the company or the organization that produces this podcast, over the last 3 years, we've actually had 10 STEM-related students in surveying that we're getting through university. And my next thing now is, as they complete their university studies, their first degrees, is to get them to the UK and points beyond through the Chevron scholarship and all of that, because they need to increase their bandwidth in terms of skills acquisition, in terms of networking, in terms of the opportunities to learn. It's very, very vital. And we also need to encourage girls from a very early age, and actually everyone, to start to look into internships, but particularly women, because through internships, you gain skill sets that you do not gain just by being in school reading books. Unfortunately, I have found in Nigeria that they spend 7 years in uni and they only have maybe one session, if that, of internship on the job learning. How do you begin to apply? And so if you continue to do this regurgitation of information, you're not really growing. But most importantly, I think that there has to be intentionality in the things that we do, starting with all the stakeholders, from the government to the women entrepreneurs and to those who support the women entrepreneurs, that we have to be intentionally moving things forward so that we can achieve this gender parity. It doesn't have to be 131 years, but each person must contribute in some way to what they are doing. I get a resounding yes from Ngozi. Ngozi,
yes, because I mean, it's to ensure optimal performance, you know, for to this national development, we really need to encourage getting to government, like you said, seeing 7 years and coming out with so little is very heartbreaking. Because this is not the forum to go into what happens even in the universities and how those, if we bring it down to women, your heart would break to hear a lot of stories that these kids or these young women or young girls face going through those 7 years and coming out with practically nothing. So, but again, the emphasis on the traditional factors actually threaten development, where the girl child is considered just good enough for marriage and not for education. That is so something that a lot of attention has to be paid to, where there'll be that encouragement, the women or the girl child starts from beginning and gets technical education or education that encourages technology. That little girl is the same little girl that grows into the woman of tomorrow. So when that starts from beginning, encouraging them, training them, putting structures in place that would capture them when they become women. Now I'm talking about the rural areas. I'm not talking about the developed areas. We're talking about the women in the villages, because agriculture, the food we eat in the city is actually made in the rural areas. So if you don't train that woman in the rural area to understand what she's producing, how to optimize her production, how to transport it out to the city, they face a lot of issues like exploitation. So again, I'm hammering on education, training them, creating programs. For instance, in CPW Africa, we have projects. We actually bully ourselves, throw ourselves into government. We start from the local government, we go in there. And I encourage other organizations. I'm sure we're not the only women-owned organizations that are doing that. Here in Nigeria, we have an organization called ANWBN, and that's the Association of Women-Owned Businesses in Networking Nigeria. It holds over 70 organizations, women-owned organizations. So can you imagine 70 of us, a coalition of that 70, we come together and we put our voices together and go out there to make big cases with government, multinationals, stakeholders, local government, international bodies. We throw ourselves out there, encouraging, insisting on educating the woman and the girl child.
This is the Thinking Reimagined podcast, sponsored by Allied Empowerment. Allied Empowerment Consultancy offers leadership and innovation through bespoke human development solutions, brain-based leadership, and coaching. Allied Empowerment empowers business leaders, teams, and individuals to intentionally accentuate desired outcomes built on trust, curiosity, psychological safety, engagement, and communication. Allied Empowerment, thriving in a sustainable and valued manner.
There's a lot of under... Yeah, I'm listening. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. So I know it's a big topic, and you're also very passionate about talking about education. particularly for the child and all of that. But I just wanted to also link that very quickly with what you think has worked for you, just before we get back to Helene, because in your profile, you know, we talked about you started a business some 20 years ago. Can you talk about, you know, what kind of, how you've been able to develop a sense of resilience, you know, and the ability to bounce back from setbacks? Because my wife also started a business some 5 years ago, and you know, I have seen how starting isn't enough, you know. People just, there are a lot of problems that make you want to just think of doing something else, you know, from what you started. So how do the female, how do women entrepreneurs embrace that kind of resilience,
you like know, I said, when else? Yes, like I said earlier, I talked about stereotype. It's something that is so malignant in the life of every woman in business. And truly, being a businesswoman or an entrepreneur, it's not something for the lily-livered. You have to know, be competent in what you do. That again, Nifemi, takes me back again to education. Knowing your product, knowing the business, having your vision, knowing your goals, keeping your focus is very important. That's what actually gives you the cushion for survival. Because in our terrain here in Nigeria, it wasn't very easy for me to really start and survive those 20 years to get to where I am, especially if you're in the industry that I'm in. I'm actually in what you call the male-dominated industry, because I'm a furniture, office furniture manufacturer. How many women are carpenters in my field? How many? We're just very few. And but there are many platforms that have really encouraged us, which I also encourage women to belong and say things like for instance, the Manufacturers Association of Nigeria, they have loads and loads of men. For me to pull it through and be the chairperson for that sector, that sectoral group that holds over 200 and something manufacturers in my industry, I don't think it wasn't an easy thing to do. But then you stand up for what you know. Your voice is your superpower. You speak your walk your talk. Know your job. I'll give you a personal example. Now, there are times you come into work, like I always say, like you said about your wife, you come in and everything just goes down. But you know, when you know what to do, it wouldn't mean anything anymore. If you learn how to use your machines, for instance, and one man comes in and says, "Madam, I'm ill," and to use the Nigeria factor, "I know well, I can't do it," and he's being spiteful. I know how to operate my machines. I know how to drive the truck. I've encouraged women to be part of the business. The machine operators in my factory are women. I have a truck driver that is a woman. My head of HOD for PPE is a woman. I encourage women employment. So I go out there and I tell women, support a fellow woman, pull the next woman, create my passion for knowledge seeking. I always call myself a knowledge student. I founded Strategic Women and Youth Institute. I'm more like a training institution for women economic empowerment, educating them, knowing how to be who they are, understanding the nature of their business, bringing in technology, knowing what is current and how to increase productivity and profit making. So when you fail, or I always say fail forward, you don't fail and say, "Oh, there's no getting up." When you fail forward. And the forward means you're using the experience that has cost you a little setback as a stepping stone to going to the next level. So if you notice again, pardon?
No, go ahead.
Yes. So if you look at it again, it's all being grounded in knowing the product or the business you're in. Growing through my business, I have been through it all. I've had to borrow money from the bank, even when I wasn't given a chance. When the business picked up and Noxy became a name, everybody, a go-to name, oh, the woman in the male-dominated industry, the woman advocate, because I do not keep quiet, I really speak. I've got so much confidence, and I tell women, love yourself, love what you do, and put a price to what you do, or if you call, like I say, put tax on it.
And well, you know, when I would like to add to, oh, I thought Ngozi was finished. Sorry, Ngozi.
Sorry, I'm not done.
There's just a bit of a delay on my end.
Okay, one little thing. So when I got to that stage where I borrowed money, and I wasn't, the clients I did the work for didn't pay on time, that got me all twisted, you know, and I couldn't, it was a bad time. I couldn't pay off my loans. I thought I was going to fold up. I thought there was not going to be any headway. But I sat back and said to myself, I perish. But I'm not going to sink without making an effort. So I sat back and thought to myself, what next? And that's where disrupting the big guys for me in my business came up. You learn to disrupt the big people in the business. You look around and ask, these big ones have so much bureaucracy, they sleep and they wake up and look for who does the work. And you ask yourself as a small business person, it's not time to sleep. When they're sleeping, you are exploiting their sleep time and thinking, what next? How best? And how do you conquer their big industry while they are asleep? So to answer the last question you asked, how did I survive? I survived when they were sleeping. I was thinking of what next to do in my coverall business. I said, the big companies like ExxonMobil, Owando, and all of them, Ajib, just you name the oil and gas industry, they use the big names in coveralls like Walls, Dickies, the big names in America and in England. And there was no Noxy coverall. I sat down and I thought of it, what makes Dickies stand out? And what has made Walls coverall stand out? I went through it, I read through it, I put it together, and I created the Noxy coverall. I took it up, gave it to them, they tested it on their rigs for 9 months. Bingo, Nifemi, it pulled through. I undercut their prices.
Wow.
And handed it to them, got it trademarked. Before anybody knew what they could do, I trademarked it. So when they're selling at, for not putting figures forward, if they're selling at 10 naira, I'm selling at 2 naira 50 kobo. How do you close that gap? So these were things, the kind of things I did to disrupt them when they were sleeping. And I tell other women, when you sit down and think a little bit, because where there is a woman, there is a way to every problem. Whether you agree with me, Nifemi, or not, it's the truth.
I guess this is what you get when you ask a 20-year experience question. Very, very, very exciting and passionate. Thank you so much for sharing. Dr. Abba, that's something else.
Yeah, it is. And thank you so much for amplifying the importance of knowing your industry and always disrupting things, because the reality is those companies that survive, those entrepreneurs that are successful, they're disruptors. They're disruptors. So if you're a disruptor and you're willing to go through it, then you have to be knowledgeable. You have to be powered to know what's going forward. I wanted to add, very importantly, networking, the power of networking. One of the reasons why I'm part of Savitas is the network. Women entrepreneurs need to amplify their networks. They need to spend time building their network. It is social, but literally it can give you the flexibility to collaborate and engage with others. And so it amplifies what you're trying to do. So you're no longer just one person trying to achieve things. It now becomes a group of you coming together under one umbrella, pushing the agenda or supporting each other in the business that you're working with. I also think it's important for me, it's been important for me to know where the resistance is. When you know where the resistance is, then you know how you're going to counteract impacted. And there is resistance to women entrepreneurs. It's there, we all know it. So be aware of it and know how you're going to maneuver past it and move forward with the agenda. And I've also always focused on the target, not the goal. You know, the goal is this big thing, but the target, when you have targets and you can reach those targets, not only does it build your confidence, but it also amplifies what you're trying to do. So I set targets. There's always a goal, you know, the SDG goal to achieve, you know, equality. But look at the target, because those are the things that you can measure. And when you can measure it, then you can have data to back what you're doing. And speaking of data, we need more data. The more data we have, the more we can bring to light what is going on for women entrepreneurs, but at the same time implement the changes and communication. You know, I love to communicate. You, everyone here is a communicator, but we need women talking about what's going on for us to bring about systemic change. There must be communication.
Dr. Amma, may I just cut in a little bit into what you're saying?
If we don't forget, Helene is waiting to speak as well.
Okay, I'm so sorry. No, I was just going to talk about the Africa factor, where we have the AFCFTA, the importance of the borderless Africa for trade, especially for entrepreneurs. I was just trying to hold on to you saying about networking. For us in Africa, we have what you call the Agenda 2063. No one is left behind. Women equality, women, the networking, the borderless Africa trade, that is so key, especially when you're networking. Trade is very important in what women entrepreneurs within Africa are doing. So when you have over 20 million women coming under one roof, what do you think would happen to that continent? So that's where we're at. Thanks, Elaine, if I didn't take too much of your time.
Elaine, are you there? I completely agree with the networking, but it's also very important to give as much as you get. So in 2007, 100 amazing women from my network came together in the House of Lords to launch what was then called Pink Shoe Club, and is now Savitas, and we now are global. We bring together women, we have global ambassadors such as the wonderful Dr. Amma and many more in five continents across the world. So with World Business Women, we all come together. But right from the start, we've had a saying, and that is that we want radiators, not sponges. In other words, people who bring their energy, their contacts, their ideas to bring together to the group so that we can all share together. And I think if we have that attitude that we're looking for radiators, people who give out, who want to help and support, who look to how they can help the women coming through, pass on a hand to the next generation, that to me is at the heart of everything that we do. The joys of technology. it's really important. But I also believe that it doesn't matter what your business is, whether you're making a product, whether you're in manufacturing, whether you're a service industry, and whatever you do, it's all about the people. You know, I learned when I started up my first business, I was actually at school and then went on into banking and did other things. But the one thing that I've always found throughout is surround yourself with the best people, recruit people more intelligent, brighter, younger, fitter, whatever it is for you. It doesn't matter if they're older, whatever they are, but just surround yourself with the very best people, because that way you'll be a success. Yes, passion, vision, having that goal, they're all absolutely vital. But if you don't have the people around you, you're not going to hit that target. Because it is all about people, and that's really my passion with everything that I do. And every business that I've ever had has been successful due to the people in it.
I agree with you. Without people, there is no business. Absolutely. People. Yes. But I must add, if you don't mind, Helene, if I can just say the diversity of people is very critical. You know, the intergenerational aspect of it. just diversity of thought, because that's what leads to the innovation that makes the changes that we're all looking for. And that in itself contributes positively to the economy, but also to social growth. I mean, how do you improve the lifestyle or the life condition of women if you don't take all of that into consideration? And I believe that women are better at, and in many cases keep their eye on that when they're developing new technologies and products and services, because they know acutely what is going on and what is necessary for the next woman, just like themselves, to thrive in their business.
I completely agree. I mean, inclusive innovation is at the foundation of Savitas, but we have a very, very diverse global group of women. And it's important to add, we're women-centric, not women only. We have many brilliant male allies with whom we work in all aspects of the work that we do within Savitas. And I take that into my other businesses as well, because it's important for us all to work together. So while we are women-centric, we're very, very welcoming of all the male allies that we have as part of our group. And that's really important to add.
Absolutely.
Before we go, I have a question I want to pose to the ladies today. And that is the question of inclusivity in businesses. You know, sometimes it's just an add-on comment, you know, like DEI. But the reality is, do you think, this is my question, do you think that if it was mandated for companies, organizations, governments to show what they are doing within their KPIs to address inclusivity, that it will help to reduce this 131 years that we're looking at towards gender parity? What are your thoughts?
Definitely. What was the Beijing conference all about? It's all about inclusivity. I'll give you an example. Here in Nigeria, women wanted 35% at the National Assembly, asking for a place for women in government. It was turned down the first time at the first hearing. You do not want to know what the women did. They went to town. You know what? Including the speaker's wife went to town to say, we need to be heard. So inclusivity, especially in government, we know our roles as women. Yes, it would help if government understands that the role of women in any government or in any business or in any economy, the importance of the role of women is very, 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 you know, useful to the growth of any economy. So I don't know if that has answered your question or it's leading to something else. I'm trying to cut it short since we are at the end of it. But well,
Thank you. I would like to just add to that before we finish that Dr. Armour mentioned data. Well, we have that data. We have that evidence from the biggest firms in the whole of the world who have proven that diverse teams, inclusive teams are more successful. The bottom line is better when you have a diverse board or a diverse workforce. We have the data, we have the evidence. So now all we need to do is have the action. And I believe we're a long way towards that. We have further to go.
Absolutely, absolutely. Before we go, let's just take a few comments online from some who've joined this podcast live on LinkedIn. Tonella says, I totally agree, we should all support each other. She goes on to say, I love being part of networks like Savitas that support each other and make changes happen. And I totally agree, we should all support each other. Stella O'Kinney says, well done, ladies. I'm truly indulged in this podcast because I'm very passionate about anything that concerns, I believe, women. Before we go, ladies, there might be something we're leaving out, and it has to do with, you know, balancing personal and professional responsibilities, which I believe is critical to not just success in business, but sustainable success. And, you know, you have done it for years. Perhaps you can share with us just in a few seconds how you've been able to establish a clear boundary between work and personal life, making time for, you know, self-care, relaxation, and how you've been able to strike a balance for that healthy work-life, you know, relationship. Who wants to go first?
Hey, Are you sure that's the question you're trying to ask, Nifemi? Because that's a question that's always posed to women, but not necessarily posed to men. So it's sort of a biased question.
No. I disagree with you, Dr. Amma. It's a question for everyone. Mm. If you ask me
It's okay, Dr. Amma. I think I'll take him up on that. There's nothing called work-life balance. There's no such definition for that. What works for the man and the woman together. No woman wants to come back from work with the man and you see the man with his feet crossed and watching television and she's in the kitchen cooking. I think those times have gone. So no work, nothing.
My question had nothing to do with men.
That's what we smell.
I think you got my question completely wrong. My question had nothing to do with men. I'm saying, how do you, okay, for instance, you've done business for 20 years, and I know there are times you become so passionate, and the only thing that drives you is your work. How do you balance work and personal life? I'm talking about self-care, you know, prioritizing your health, which of course enhances your productivity and creativity as an entrepreneur. I mean, this has nothing to do with men.
Right. I would agree with you
because I think that it's really, really important to keep oneself fit and healthy. You know, I studied nutrition when I lived in the States, and I really abide by those well-being ways of living, because if you're not fit, how can you run your business? And when you've got people depending upon you, so a work-life balance is really important. I take holidays, I don't answer emails or do any work at certain times of the weekend, because I think if you don't do that, you don't have a chance to recharge your batteries. So whatever your personal circumstances are, yes, it's important to have teamwork in the home, just as it is to have a teamwork in the business, but it's also important, you know, if you don't put your health first, you won't have a business because you won't be healthy.
Well, Lynn, I will follow up with that and say that for me, I always look at it as life work, not work life. So life comes first and work is a part of my life. So my life is my priority, my life is my focus, and everything else fits under it. So I exercise regularly, you know that, Nifemi. I put in about 10 to 15 kilometers a day, 5 days a week. I make sure that I get rest. I do take care of myself, because if I don't take care of that, this thing up here, the brain, which I need to function, as well as my heart, my mind, will not be in synergy. And that is a priority, not just for me, but I think it should be for everyone. It's not about burning out. Burning out does not make you a success. It's when you're in alignment with who you are and looking at your life and how work and everything else fits into your life. So that would be my response to your question. And I hopefully that was the real question you were asking, but I smelled else, because I know you need for me.
It is how you recreated the total.
To be honest, I purposely pinched you with the other one to make sure you knew what you were asking.
I knew exactly what I was asking.
It was good you reframed it properly. But I think the ladies are answered. And for me, I will only throw in meditation. I love family. I love friends. I'm very envious of Amma's exercise regime. She's so dedicated. I could never match that, Dr. Amma, so get that straight. There's just very few of you out there who do what you do. She doesn't eat, but I love food. And so when I'm not working, I'm actually happy to sit with family and friends and just enjoy a good meal. The things I don't get to see when I'm in the UK, like suya, that's very nice when I'm out here, enjoy myself. But I'm very family oriented. I'm very happy. I love friends. I'm a people's person. And so when I'm not working, I'm generally a very happy person. Very noisy, very chatty. So I enjoy the chat, being a chatterbox. So yes, that's also for me another way of freeing my heart and my mind of stress.
Quick one, let's take this last message from Martinella.
Atanella Ragona. She says, absolutely well said, Helen. We need more radiators, and no matter what you do, what counts are the people involved. One thing I have learned from Elaine is to learn from each other and to push myself more. And no dream is too big. You just need the right network. Ladies, I think our time is up. It's been a fantastic conversation, everyone. Thank you so much for bringing in into this conversation. Elaine Ngazi, hopefully we'll have you join us on subsequent episodes. Dr. Ama.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much, ladies. Do you have one last word, just one word that you would like to impact for the others out there?
For me, enjoy. For every woman, you're just enough for yourself.
Yeah, I would just say enjoy. Enjoy life, enjoy your business, enjoy everything that you do, and go with all your heart.
Yes. And I would say mine is intentionality. Be intentional in all of your endeavors, and you can only succeed and thrive. And of course, make the impact that you desire. Thank you, ladies, and thank you, everyone who has joined us virtually. We appreciate your presence, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Elaine, thank you. Ngazi, thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
This has been a Thinking Reimagined podcast.
The executive producer is Dr. Ama. Co-producer Peter Ammon Boyle.
The podcast is edited by Nelken, and it is moderated by Nifemi Okuntoyin.
Thinking Reimagined emphasizes the importance of transformational conversations, which have as their aim the bringing about of the rich diversity of thoughts and, most importantly, powerful and applicable effective solutions and change.
The views, opinions, and contributions of the panelists are exclusively theirs and do not reflect the opinions of Thinking Reimagined producers or personnel. Thank you for listening,
and we hope you have enjoyed this episode.
We invite you to subscribe to Thinking Reimagined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and other outlets.
We look forward to presenting another riveting episode next week.
Thinking Reimagined podcast is produced by Live Abundantly.
We welcome your thoughts and invite you to visit our website, livesabundantly.com.
Or you can follow us on social media on Live Abundantly 8.
Thinking Reimagined, changing the mindset for a better, global society.